And from Whispers from Eternity, Master's Book of Poems, make me thy butterfly of eternity. I have burnt my past, destroying every seed of evil destiny. I have stridden bravely through the strewn ashes of my past and future fears. I am the eternal now, having torn to shreds my enclosing cocoon of ignorance with the sharp knife of free will. Now I am thy soaring butterfly of eternity, flitting freely through immeasurable skies of time. The beauty of my wings I spread out through nature everywhere to entertain all beings. My wings are sprinkled with sun and stardust. Lo, I am beautiful. May every silken thread that shrouded my past folly be severed forever. See, they trail now behind me, only adding to my beauty as I wing my way to my own self in thee. I'm not one who follows the news. I never have. But these days, one peeks around more than usual just to see what the planet is doing. And I caught a piece of an interview, not interview, that would not be the right word, confrontation is the actual word, between a black man and a white man in the South over whether or not a certain statue should be taken off of its pedestal. The statues are purported to be from the Civil War, but in fact were put up in the 1900s as a symbol of segregation. So it's a very peculiar, complicated perception of reality that we are all working in at this time. And as I heard one news commentator say, if people appeal through legitimate channels with valid grievances and authorities do not respond, then people take things into their own hands. Of such stuff are revolutions made. Whether we are in for a revolution, whether we are in for a blip on the horizon of civil unrest, God alone knows. Fortunately, God does know. And we will simply take the karma that is handed to us. You know, what was going to happen in the next few years with everybody campaigning and arguing and putting their money here, their advertisements there. They're all going to be instruments of karma that is not being determined by human beings. The difficulty with the display of karma is that there is always these thwarting cross currents of ego that cause karma to be delayed. There's a certain sort of fun reality that we often talk of at Ananda, which is instant karma. And instant karma is very good karma, because when instant karma comes, you know exactly what caused it. The problem with most karma is that the thwarting cross currents of ego delay it, and it comes out like a boomerang, and it sails around often for a very long time before you finally get the consequences of your first action. It's especially complicated when you're dealing with national karma, when you're dealing with group karma. Thinking of instant karma, I had a marvelous experience in India a number of years ago. When we were first starting to lead pilgrimages to India, which I and three others did for over a period of about 20 years, until Ananda established itself in India, and then Ananda residents there mostly took over the project. In any case, I retired. But at the beginning, I often tried really to control what happened. And often the struggle was between our local guides and their desire to show us the things they were most proud of, and at least my ideas of where I really wanted to go. And one of those experiences happened in the city of Varanasi in Benares, which is a very, very old city. Our guide was a lovely man, extremely proud of his city, and he was determined to take us to this very ancient temple to Divine Mother in the form of Durga. I had no wish to go to that temple So I was already crabby when I got off the bus, because he'd sort of kidnapped the bus because he could speak the bus driver's language and these things would happen. The reason I didn't want to go there is this temple was actually mostly known as the Monkey Temple, not because it was to Hanuman, but because it was filled with monkeys. Monkeys are not my favorite creatures, especially not running free as they do in Varanasi. So it's a very ancient temple, but there's a lot of monkeys there. And it was just, it was a bad day for me. There was a marigold garland that was well past its expiration date. And for reasons that I don't know, the pujari, the priest who was there, was determined that I should wear this marigold garland. So he put it around me in a very sort of, well, he wasn't very refined, but he was trying to honor me with it. But it had this awful smell, so I didn't really like it on me, so I kept taking it off, and then he would find it, and then he would find me again and put it on me. And the whole time you're there, you're negotiating with all these monkeys, and you have to stay really conscious of where you are. In Varanasi, it's an issue because they're ahimsa. They won't do anything to reduce the population. I don't know what the problem is now. I'm talking now 1986, 87. But it's an issue there because they don't want to kill, but they keep proliferating. It's a bit of an issue. So we have to negotiate the monkeys. You have to always watch where you are. You have to be sure that you're not caught, and people walk around with sticks to sort of protect you. I am walking around. And the deity itself, everything is old. Everything is a little moldy. Everything is not to my idea of what it should be. So I am walking around there totally in a curmudgeon state, you know, trying to get rid of this putrid garland, trying to feel the slightest bit of inspiration in this temple. Bad, bad thoughts, bad, bad thoughts, bad, bad thoughts, which distracted me from the monkeys. So I actually walked between a group of monkeys. So I'm suddenly between the monkeys, and they're not fond of me being like this. So one of the monkeys actually jumps on my shoulders, which is not a good thing to have happen. So he jumps on my shoulders. I, being braver than I think I'm going to be, I am told later that this is what I actually did. I actually grabbed the monkey like this, threw it on the ground, and said, "Get off of me, you filthy thing," just like that. Then the monkey went after me, but I was wearing a dress, thank God, and he sank his teeth into what he thought was me, but it was only my dress. And then we're in a tug of war. I'm still just like yelling at this monkey, let go of me, like this. Finally, I rip my dress out of his mouth, by which point every official there, you know, I'm the, what I'm called in India, the white woman who is also group leader, who's about to be eaten by a monkey. So there were a lot of people rushing in. To me, it was like so perfect. It was like I heard Durga, who rides on a lion and carries quite a few weapons, saying, "Don't mess with me, honey. Don't be fooled even for a second. There's nothing, that the appearances are not what's going on here. I have been ruling this temple for, you know, long before you were even sent forth from God, you know, and don't mess with me." And it was like, "Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am." You know, I just went over with complete devotion to Durga. Instant karma. Bad thought, bad experience, just like that. I came home, then the dress that I had was something I wore always in India. So I went to the fabric store and I got a decal of a big monkey. I sewed it right on there. I wore it in India faithfully and devotedly ever after that, because it was always reminding me, we just don't know what's going on here. We just put these little human ideas over things. You know, why can't they keep this temple cleaner? Why are the monkeys always running around? Why does that priest want me to wear that terrible garland? I don't know. I don't know any of that. But Divine Mother says, you know, I do. And don't even for a second allow yourself to fall into those kinds of thoughts. So, going back to where I am, where I was in this conversation this morning, I see this encounter between this black man who wants this statue pulled down and this white man from the South who's very committed. You can tell by everything about his demeanor, his voice, his manner. He's very committed to what he perceives to be his heritage. They start arguing with each other. You know, my My grandfather fought for his land here. He didn't, and he, you know, this is my heritage. You can't take it down. The black man says, who was working your grandfather's land? Like that, you know, it was my grandfather working your grandfather's land. The white man's answer was amazing. He said, we were too poor. Do you know what a slave cost? We worked our own land. I mean, like, what an answer. Oh, my God. Well, here's where it all came from, though, and comes down for what I'm talking about now. The person who my heart broke for was that white man, because you could feel his desperate desire to be seen, to belong, to be respected. You could just sort of feel this who knows how many incarnations of this man just trying to find his place in the world. You know, the black man, despite the color of his skin, thinking that he was the underdog in this, you could see he could move through life effectively, regardless of what the obstacles were. And I'm not in any way excusing the obstacles that were placed in front of him because of the color of his skin. But you could see he understood how to move through life. He was protesting from a point of strength, not from a point of weakness. Whereas the white man, hurtingly weak. That's the only thing I can say about it. It's just everything in you wanted to ease suffering that was causing him to fight against something that should have been accepted with grace. So I'm going to extrapolate from this, and I'm going to for a minute to when I was in India last year. I was in India last year. I went into Swami's house in Pune, which is the community, the land we had there where Swami had a home. There's a poster on the wall, which was one of his photographs with one of his sayings on it, which happened to have been a saying that I'd never seen before. I don't know how. I've been in that house many times, but I never saw it. It said, and I don't have it exactly. True joy is to take the griefs of others and offer them to Divine Mother. And truthfully, I had no idea what that meant. Somehow I felt it was important to me, but true joy is to take the griefs of others and offer them to Divine Mother. And I just puzzled over this and puzzled over this. And finally I was speaking to my friend Devarshi, who's a monk, an Indian American man, but he lives in India as a monk. And I was sharing with him that this, I don't understand what this means. He wrote back to me just brilliantly and beautifully. He said, if you're a little child and you see, let's say your brother or your sister is having a problem, and it's a problem bigger than you can solve, what will you do? You'll run to your mother. Mommy, mommy, Sissy is crying in her bedroom and I don't know why she's crying. You know, my older brother, he's outside and he's just throwing rocks against the tree and I don't know what he's so mad about because I can't solve it. I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know what the cause is. I'm not big enough to solve it. So I run to my mother and then I know my mother's going to go and take care of it. Now, I see in the present time and now, please understand me. It's not that I have no sympathy for the Black Lives Matter movement, that whole thing. I'm not really talking politics, and I don't really like to get into politics. Of course, I understand. I see the whole picture. I'm saying this because please don't imagine for a second that I don't understand. But what I'm thinking about is we are all Divine Mother's children, and anyone who suffers, we're all diminished by that suffering. That doesn't mean that everybody gets what they want, because everything has to be solved in the direction of expanded awareness and learning for all of us. The only solution to all this suffering, whether it's light-skinned or dark-skinned, whether it happened yesterday or is going to happen tomorrow, the only solution is for us to understand that we are all in this together and there is not one person's suffering that is different from mine. It's the same. It's just always the same. in the extraordinary life of Betsy and Corrie ten Boom, who were devout Christians who helped rescue Jews from Nazis during the Second World War. Both the sisters ended up in a concentration camp. Betsy died. Corrie had to go on. Betsy's vision when they were in the camp was of a time afterward when they would help people heal. And to Corrie's astonishment, she expected the people they would help heal would be all the people in the camp who were the prisoners. But Betsy's vision is that they would help heal the Nazis, that they would help heal the guards, that they would help heal all those who had perpetrated this evil, not the victims of it. And in fact, that's what exactly what came to be true. Betsy, of course, her sympathy was for everyone, but the real misery she saw was the ones who were perpetrating it because of the karma they were setting in motion, because of what's beginning to happen, and because of all the suffering inside them that could cause them to inflict such terrible suffering on someone else. You know, it just broke her heart to see such misery expressed in such a horrible way, and then setting in motion all the suffering that was going to come. We are all Divine Mother's children, and justice must be served, appropriate responses must be given. Master himself, when he was talking about one world of peace and freedom, a one world where we all, the United States of all nations, he still spoke of an international police force in order to keep bullies in line and to keep bullies from having their opportunity. But now what I'm coming to is so often in and this is a long cycle of time, for an individual, we are moved by compassion. Whoever we're moved to help, whatever the situation might be, refugees, prisoners, people of one race or another, an oppressed religious minority, whatever it might be, we're moved to help. But it's very difficult to really feel like one's having an impact. And so often what happens is we become exhausted, or we become angry, or we become cynical, or we just become absolutely overwhelmed. And rather than bringing to a situation that's full of darkness, rather than bringing light into it, we bring more darkness into it. The darkness of despair, or the darkness of anger. Righteous indignation has its place. Sometimes we must express what we feel. There's no beauty in cowardice. You know, there are times when it is necessary to speak up. But above all, joy is when we take the griefs of others and we offer them to Divine Mother. Because this world is not meant to ever come out right. We have all these forces of karma that are individual and that are national and that are global, that are all playing themselves out. We're caught in a great many of those right now. Yogananda predicted, the period of time that we may be right on the cusp of. It's been building for many, many decades. We've just been watching the gradual deterioration of courtesy, of civility, of respect. What the music that is popular becomes more and more violent and more and more egoic. The value systems are more and more corroded. I can go on and on and on about that, but that's not the point. We see it. We see it coming. And some of the karmas are very old karmas. Master said that America has very good karma overall. We were founded for religious freedom. Overall, we have been a noble country. And it's a very important thing to realize, as Swamiji put it very clearly. The mere fact that there is darkness everywhere does not mean that darkness is present everywhere in the same proportion. So what people are inclined to do these days, because we're not thinking clearly, is if there's a white sheet and some black polka dots on it, we declare the whole thing black. And then we just begin to tear everything down. And that's not what Divine Mother is trying to teach us. What Divine Mother wants us to understand, Master said this, Master talked about America. He said America came in with very high ideals and very high energy and became a unique Dwapara country in that anybody could arrive in this country and with hard work and the right effort could rise as high as a person could rise. That doesn't mean that it was actually equal. I mean, I'm not going to go into all the sociological aspects, which are all true. But overall, that has been the reality of America. That's why Master came here, because he could say self-realization for everyone. And there was a field, there was a plowed field in which that could rest. Master, as a dark-skinned person, was discriminated against. He was literally driven out of Miami, Florida, when he tried to teach integrated audiences in Washington, D.C., I believe it was. He wasn't allowed to do it, so he started the Negro Self-Realization Society. He just went with his own dark skin and drew all the people of dark skin around him, because if he couldn't teach them together, he would teach them because self-realization belongs to everyone. But, he said, America took this country from the Native Americans. And that was very bad karma. It was very bad karma for the country. But the thwarting cross currents of ego, which is the dynamic power and energy of this country for centuries now, he said, has kept that karma a little bit at bay. But Master says it still has to be paid off. And it will probably be paid off in economic suffering, because it was greed that caused us to do it. We disregarded divine values in order to get money. And that's been America's Achilles heel, is that there's dynamic goodness in countless ways. It was a joke once when we were fighting against or competing against the Russians to put the man on the moon. One suggestion was, we send a dog to the moon with no way of getting him back. And America's incredible concern for the welfare of that dog will cause us to put all our resources behind it just to rescue him. And that's the best of this country, that heart. But we didn't use that heart, and we haven't always used that heart. But Master says that we will. We will learn to use it. But it's going to be, he said, a trial by fire. We will emerge as a country, he said, stronger and better and purified from that experience to be able to be who we really are. But in the meantime, not only in America but all over the world, we're all being asked how to respond. And direct action may be required if a person feels inspired. That's your destiny to do it. My, quote, political activism has always been to teach people to meditate, to try to teach people to love God, because that is the answer. But I have suffered. I've suffered deeply watching other people suffer, but not being able to participate on the level of moving the chess pieces, because every time I try to get involved in anything like that, there's just too many shades of gray. And now Swamiji has given me the answer. True joy is to take the griefs of others and give them to Divine Mother, because she knows. Sometimes the human mind just wants to take away the symptoms, just wants to make it better. Swami gave us very interesting advice in terms of counseling people who come to you with a serious problem or with a problem of any kind. He said you should be sympathetic, but not too sympathetic. It's a strange answer, isn't it? He said, because if you're too sympathetic, it encourages people to feel that their problems are enormous. So there always has to be this sense of, yes, this is a difficulty, but we can get through it. You know, we don't, in other words, and the other part of it that Swami has often talked about, if someone is drowning and you don't know how to swim, if you just dive in with them, two of you will drown and may even make it worse as you flail around together. In order to be able to help someone, you have to walk in with some kind of strength that you can use to bring them forward. And when people are all angry with each other, you can't just run in with more anger. Let me say it differently. A person who understands the path of self-realization We have to always be acting also as Divine Mother would act, with total compassion, with total unconditional love, but as a wise mother acts. You don't always just do what people want. You don't always just give your child what he or she demands, because the child doesn't know what is really in his best interest. He may know what he wants. He may have an idea of what he thinks will alleviate his suffering, but in the greater picture of things, this world is never meant to be perfect. It's early Dwapara. A planet in early Dwapara is quite a dynamic mixture of light and dark. We can see it all around us. And unfortunately, Master said, all the way through Dwapara Yuga, which we now have so many centuries to go, they still have war. There's still war. And in fact, it's a very insecure age because the weapons are so big and so capable of just showing up without you even knowing that they're going to be there and able of invading anybody's world. So we cannot depend on it all just working out. The drama that we have to work with is moving ourselves and everyone around us toward self-realization, toward a deeper understanding that Divine Mother is in charge. And Master said the entire purpose of difficult times that he predicted coming is so that we will understand that we are part of a greater reality. We must be channels for that divine force, and we must see everything that's happening in the context of God's will. Is that easy? No. But is that the only solution? Yes. This white man who wants to be mad at this black man, and they're going to fight like this, they might, you know, be able to pull the statue down. I think the statue should come down. I will take that position. I think it should come down. But this man's suffering is not going to go away. It's just going to harden in him and find some other way of coming out. Or this man's anger is just going to harden in him. Everybody's going to be doing this. All of that has to be put in the hands of Divine Mother. And what really has to happening is an awakening, a deeper awakening on a completely different level, which is, I am a child of God. I am here to learn. Anything that disturbs my heart, let me try to find the presence of the divine within me and from that place act. As long as we're acting the way we're acting, which is just egos to ego, we're just sending out boomerang after boomerang of karma. And whether it hits us in this lifetime, whether it hits you immediately, like the monkey jumping on my back to tell me about the goddess Durga, or whether it hits the next generation when I'm somewhere else learning the lesson in a whole nother culture, even a whole nother planet, who knows? But we have an obligation. We have a divine duty. That duty is to self-realization. That duty is to self-realization of this individual jiva, and make me an instrument of thy light to everyone I meet. Find ourselves first in the power and the presence of that light. The people who walked in darkness received a great light, and everything changed. Nothing will change as long as we walk in darkness, and everything will change as soon as we open ourselves to that light. God bless you.
Mother, now that I wander with thee, flowers and fields are alive with thy joy. All that I've owned to thee I've given, now I sing in thy love I am free. Father, now that I dance in thy name, birds and animals share in my song. All my sorrows, all my merriment, join in music to set hearts aflame. Father, now that I wander with thee, flowers and fields are alive with thy joy. All that I've owned to thee I've given, now I sing, in thy love I am free. Father, now that I dance in thy name, birds and animals share in my song. All my sorrows, all my merriment, join in music to set hearts aflame. All my sorrows, all my merriment, join in music to set hearts aflame.
Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father, all our lives we dedicate to Thee, all our labors, all our joys and woes, all our pleasure, all our melody. Make us each a channel of Thy peace. When in darkness, guide us from above. Where there's sorrow, may we sow thy joy. Where there's hatred, may we share thy love. Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father, all our lives we dedicate to Thee, all our labors.